Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock, it is time for the Roundtable panel. Now, in the introduction, the billboard, I described it, perhaps falsely so, as a rollicking discussion.
And we can rollick.
It occurs to me that we very rarely rollick on this program. So, anybody in the mood to rollick?
The topics are so negative.
Exactly.
It's going to be hard.
There's no rollicking to be had.
I don't believe I've rollicked since 1974.
No, right, sir. That's Ira Fussfeld.
Seems like yesterday.
He's publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. Also joining us today, WAMC's Alan Shartok. Good morning, Alan.
Yo, big boy.
And also joining us, University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter here 2 days in a row. Remarkable. Rosemary Armeo, nice to have you here.
Good morning, Ray.
Yeah, and you're right. It's serious topics all around today.
They are.
And really the last several weeks. And we begin this morning with the president's appearance yesterday. President Obama says the U.S. won't scale back its military posture in Iraq in response to the beheading of American journalist James Foley. But the president is offering no specifics about what new steps he might take to protect additional captives and other Americans. The Obama administration disclosed yesterday that earlier this summer, U.S. troops were sent out on a mission to try to rescue Foley and other hostages, but they were not at the location intelligence had identified. The president fairly, I don't know if we can call it harsh in his terms yesterday, but certainly strong worded message. What actions follow? Alan, we kick it off with you.
Well, first of all, not harsh enough. There is an American alive, I believe, who doesn't understand what, you know, how terrible this ISIS thing is. And, you know, cutting people's throats, cutting a beloved man's throat is just awful. And I think if their idea was to play to the people in their own constituency, that's one thing. But I'll tell you one thing, as Osama bin Laden found out and as others will find out, there is a line beyond which this country will not allow itself to be pushed. And now, as far as the thing you were talking about, which is that we find out after the fact that we went in and we tried to rescue them, we never would have known that unless this crisis had happened. In my mind.
Yeah, some newspaper found out about it and let the White House know they were going to come out with it. So Obama then gave the details.
Well, I think Obama probably didn't mind those details coming out because in many quarters he's being criticized for not having done enough. And although this mission to rescue these people failed, it does point out that, A, there was a rescue mission, and, B, we're also learning that the ISIS people were looking for a significant amount of money as a ransom, and the U.S.'s policy, as has been Britain's, is to not pay ransoms. We're also learning that others who ISIS held from other countries, those countries paid ransoms and those people were let free. But this all could be a game changer in terms of where we go.
It's funny you mentioned that the fact that the president is being criticized in many quarters for not doing enough. However, an article I saw this morning said on Capitol Hill in Congress, it's pretty well split. There are not, perhaps along party lines, but there are a lot who say he's doing enough and we should not rush more into this.
Yeah. Can you imagine if he had given $100 million to get these people? God. I mean, he would have been crucified.
We would have. I mean, I think it would be interesting if we actually listened to Hillary Clinton instead of saying, oh, my God, now she's criticizing the president, a horrible, you know, witchy woman. The truth was, she said, I would have done it differently in Syria in the earlier days. Definitely, he knows it, I knows it, it's on the record. But these are not easy questions. He's doing what he thought was right. And I do think that had we reacted differently earlier in Syria, ISIS would not have the power it does. But now it's here, and now we have to figure out, why are they provoking the United States like this? Why did they attack our, kill our I hope it's only one reporter. It could be, and there are threats against others. Why are they doing that?
They seem to be an equal opportunity provoker. And not.
What do you mean?
In other words, beheadings, not exclusively Christians or Jews. they're beheading Muslims at an amazing rate.
It's different when you go after a high-profile American. I think we all know. The pirating went on against everybody. Nothing happened until it was American ships being pulled over. And that's the same. And ISIS knows that. So what is it that they want? Do they want to raise money from the rest of the world that's against the United States? Do they want to provoke a full-out war?
Or get the credibility so they get the $100 million the next time? But the fact is, they are making a huge mistake. They are making a huge mistake of the kind in history which we have seen before. The Japanese at Pearl Harbor, they might have thought that, you know, that they were going to, you know, but in the end, when you motivate the American people to stick together and to be furious together, you're really taking on something you have
We talked about James Foley on the Media Project, yeah. And I'll repeat what I said there, that the goal of a war correspondent in places like he was working in was to raise the awareness of the rest of the world to what horror was going on. ISIS is a horrible organization that's making people suffer. And if his death calls attention to that and results in something that stops them, I think he would be very happy.
It seems to me that from a strategic and a tactical standpoint, we have now reached a hybrid between conventional warfare, in which nation states acted violently toward each other, and terrorism, where it's an amorphous, multi-country situation. Now, with ISIL or ISIS, you have a situation where suddenly there are geographic locations where they are. To me, this makes them entirely more vulnerable.
Because we think that they're in northern Syria. I mean, because I was going to argue just the opposite, that what made this more difficult as opposed to Pearl Harbor and other wars that we've been involved with is that we don't know where the bad guys are, A. And B, as we saw from the YouTube video of the beheading, at least the preliminary, which is what most of us saw, I don't think a lot of people sat through the beheading, was that the killer spoke in an English accent, and he's believed to be a British national, which also suggests that kind of activity can come to our shores, and there's less ability for us to prevent that kind of thing going forward. It makes it scarier.
Ira, you make a very good point. I hadn't thought about it, which is that part of our problem with all of this stuff has been that we can't identify who the enemy is. Mm-hmm. It's not the enemy is, you know. Well, no, I mean, we know who they are, Rosemary, who just made a face. We know who they are, but they're not governments in many cases.
Right, right.
And so here, they're out on the field with their with their trucks and their stuff. And, you know, it's like the old warfare. You get rid of them. You shoot them down. And that's easy enough to do on a desert.
I'm making a face because I think it's difficult to explain what's going on. But you've hit it. These are not nations going to war anymore. We call them terrorists. But the truth is that there's something that's transcending nations now. It's Syria and Iraq. Where are the old states of Syria and Iraq? Do they even exist anymore? Sure. And so we have the methods to fight when our enemy is another country. We do not have experience, if not the methods, to go after a group like ISIS or ISIL. As you point out, they change their name every week. Right. What the heck do you do with that?
And many of them can fly into this country and not be on no-fly list because they're citizens.
Absolutely.
Now, this is perhaps the most terrifying aspect of this is what you mentioned, where the killer spoke with a British accent. Linguists are working on it now, and they suggest he originally is from the London area. And the British passports, that's what I think is scaring people today, because you got a British passport, you come right on in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Well, we already know of at least one American who was part of that group and who I believe has already been killed by us or by somehow in that battlefield. But who knows if there are Americans who can freely come back and forth. So that's what makes this much more daunting. I wonder as I get older that I get more aware of and scared of things that didn't used to bother me when I'm 30, and I think, well, maybe that's because I've been around the block. Mm-hmm. I don't know about Ray, but the rest of us lived through the Cuban Missile Crisis, and
I wasn't born yet.
You weren't born, and no. Rosemary was probably in her fledgling years.
No. I was fledgling.
But I remember the world being tense about it, but I was a kid. I wasn't that tense about it. I'm more tense about these kinds of things today because I sort of can see I could be sitting in an airplane going to Los Angeles next week and find that the guy next to me who has a legitimate passport could be one of these guys. You just don't know.
So if you hear a British accent, does that make you feel funny now? Let's do the Juan Williams
here. I'll never watch Benny Hill reruns again.
Well, I mean, the bomber, the shoe bomber, oh, I hate that guy, ruined our travel experience. He was British also. So there's no there's no surprise in the fact that Germany and Britain have been cells. That's where these cells take place. So this is not new, but we still don't have the absolute way to stop them yet. We're bombing relentlessly
In northern Iraq, I believe, which is where I believe they think that the ISIS people are concentrated.
We actually seem to know quite a bit about ISIS. That we've been there. We have, unfortunately, a presence in that part of the world, and so we have tracked down a lot of information about how to use that information now in a way that gets rid of them without putting boots on the ground, which apparently we Americans will not face no matter what. That's the problem that Obama faces now.
Well, you know, that's interesting because, as the old folk song goes, it was all about that battleship of Maine, which got us into a certain Spanish-American war. And this is the kind of thing, this throat cutting, this beheading, I think that mobilizes people in a way to put boots back on the ground.
Well, you know, I agree with you, but I think the other difficult thing about this situation is it is believed that a lot of these young militants in ISIS were kids during the Iraq War, and that they saw what happened to their country and to their people.
The head of it is like
and
that.
They grew up into militants, to be militants.
They believe they're freedom fighters for their
country.
Now,
let's just say, if we had the ability tomorrow to wipe out most of the ISIS folks, including their leadership today, there may well be the next group is right behind them.
But you can't, as a military strategist and as the President of the United States, you have to at some point say, listen, whether or not we're seeding future generations, we got to take care of what's happening
question,
now.
But did somebody on one of the media shows use the phrase whack-a-mole? In other words, you can squash.
I'm not sure.
You squash them here, and then another group will grow up.
Well, that gets back to my original point at the outset, which some of you don't necessarily agree with, that this is a hybrid situation in that ISIS has, at least in its own mind, borders. They may be changing, but part of Syria, part of northern Iraq. So our military planners more or less know where they are. Exactly. And I think that makes them, that puts a big bullseye on that area. And so I would posit that.
Except that look how complicated it is. There are two areas are in Syria where the United States rather clumsily decided not to go in and do anything, and in Iraq where we were heavily involved, apparently not very effectively, and now have withdrawn. Hmm. So and now go in there and fix that.
Yeah. Let me catch me up on this because maybe I've been sleeping like Rip Van Winkle. But when Hillary criticized Obama on Syria,
right,
what did she have in mind?
Her view was that we should have teamed up with the good people who are rebelling against the government and to support them.
The Kurds.
And then, they're part of it.
Kurds,
it's more complicated than that.
But the basic philosophy on the part of the U.S. and others, Rosemary, if I get this right, was that there are good revolutionaries against the strong men in the Arab countries, and we should find them and support them. And I say baloney.
As we did in Libya, and look at that mess. So I do agree with you. But Hillary is also right in that we reached a point, you'll recall it, just in May it was, when we were going to, Obama wanted a congressional approval to go in and start bombing, to stop the government of Syria from killing its own people. And that was rejected. That was soundly rejected by public opinion and by Congress. So we didn't. And nothing happened.
Including Republicans.
Yeah. And Hillary definitely was against that. And as it turns out, perhaps that might have been something to slow or stop ISIS. It's really hard to say. And she admits that herself. She thinks the president did the wrong thing, but not a stupid thing.
Rosemary Armeo, that is who you just listened to. Alan Chartok is here. Ira Fussfeld. I'm Ray Graff. The email address, and I forgot to give this at the beginning of the program.
Yeah.
So if we're not getting email, Alan,
we are.
It's on me. Roundtable@wamc.org is the email address. Take a short break, and then we'll read some of your mail.
Support comes from Tannery Pond Concerts, New Lebanon, New York, presenting Trio Verado, flute, viola, and guitar, this Saturday at 8 p.m., 888-820-1696. BN Communications, strategic communications, public affairs, and crisis communications for 25 years, serving clients throughout the Northeast. BNCommunications.com. and interim health care, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga. InterimHealthcare.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. 27 minutes after 9 o'clock.
Wow.
WAMC's Alan Shartok is here. Rosemary Armeo, Ira Fussfeld, and yours truly, Ray Graff. We have some mail.
Yours truly. I love that when
all
you say that.
Okay.
Yours truly. It's an old radio term. Yours truly.
All right.
Okay. All right.
Page two.
I have an old radio.
Michael checks in. What do they want? They want the same thing Nazi Germany wanted. They are fascists who use Islam the same way Hitler used hatred of the Jews. They're not believers at all, but a group of gangsters looking to conquer the world for their kingdom, says Michael. And then Cheryl says, good morning. Read an article in The Guardian that these guys are insurgents, combo of terrorist and guerrilla. And John says... He's learning. For once, I agree with Alan, he says. I think this is just the sort of thing to mobilize the American populace. John from East Long Meadow.
Mobilize to what, though?
Mobilize to say, okay, we're not going to put up with this.
To a full-scale invasion?
To do whatever needs to be done. And there are always those who will say things like... what Ryan has said here. Hi, guys. In terms of fighting organizations like ISIS, we may not know how to fight them today, but we will learn.
Yeah.
And I think that's right. And Bob says, we don't have to be concerned about the return of U.S. citizens who have fought for ISIS. They should be stripped of their citizenship and or convicted of treason.
If you can identify.
That's Bob who says, no last name, please.
All right, Bob.
Okay. That is it,
okay.
I believe, for now.
All right. Roundtable@WAMC.org is the email address, roundtable@WAMC.org. So I say I'll put on the table that we take a break for news.
Okay.
And then we come back and we'll meet you all on the other side. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Silence here for a minute here. I'll do the rejoin, and then we can all talk.
Okay.
It's 9:36. Alan Shartok is here. Rosemary Armeo is here. Ira Fussfeld and Ray Graff. The email address is roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Alan, we have more mail.
We do. Some of it's getting a little long now, folks.
Oh, yeah. Remember the two-paragraph rule.
The rule is two paragraphs, but two short paragraphs.
Right. Keep it pithy.
This is like one long paragraph.
Okay. Well, maybe you can summarize?
Okay, no.
Oh,
no. My family just moved to the Strategic Air Command's base on the western end of Puerto Rico shortly before the Cuban Missile Crisis was beginning. We had base drills, and I remember having, quote, dead bodies walker from the drill in our front yard. So I come to the whole... hegemonic thing from a different perspective. With Syria, like many things truly complex, hindsight is not always accurate. Things shift and move every which way, and the president has the kind of mind that goes far deeper into the weeds than anyone to arrive at a cautious decision when the circumstances are fluid. Hillary is more emotional. I don't know about that. And is truly...
That's so sexist.
Yeah, it is. And truly a personality hawk as well as a political hawk. I personally do not pay a lot of attention to what her criticisms are. McCain is still a sore loser, but her calculations and motives have little to do with foreign affairs and military acumen. Okay. And
she
then...
Secretary of State.
What'd you say?
She was Secretary of State.
She was. She knows quite a bit about foreign affairs.
Okay. And then from somebody, from Pete from Toland. Good folks, thanks for the discussion. As always, I see that everyone has gotten in touch with their inner jingoist.
Not really.
Thus proving again that revenge is absolutely the strongest of human emotions. Cooler heads will most cautiously not prevail and capitalize not. I would caution, however, that we have to inject the proper amount of cynicism into these equations and remember who it was that originally sponsors ISIS in its early incarnations. McCain posing with rebels on the Turkish-Syrian border come to mind. And Dr. Allen is correct. You notice I read fast.
Yeah, I noticed that. And that's two people who think you're correct.
Dr. Allen
is
correct.
Maybe they got the wrong station on.
No support in capital letters for these folks. That's it, Pete from Tom.
Okay.
Okay, wait.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yes, that's it.
All right.
No.
Okay.
No, that's not it.
Hold the presses.
Okay. This idea that these groups are nationless is really frightening and seems to shadow other crimes. You used to have to physically break down a door in order to steal. Now you can sit at home in China and still manage to steal medical records in the U.S. In the same way, you can be anywhere in the world and still manage to terrorize people thousands of miles away. Figuring out how to handle these groups will certainly shape our future. Thank you for bringing such thought-provoking stories to the radio, Sarah. And I believe that's it. That's it.
I want to mention something that may sound superficial, and I think about it a lot. It's most recently regarding ISIS, but there are any number of other examples. When we were kids, we would watch the Cowboys and Indians movies on TV, and the bad guys always had masks around their faces so that they can shield.
Except for the Lone Ranger.
Right. He was the exception. And you notice in many cases, whether it's the ISIS guy or some of the agitators in Ferguson or any number of Ukraine, I believe, I saw it, that these people who purport to be freedom fighters or on the sides of the gods cover their faces. And to my mind, that immediately makes them the bad guys. Am I overreacting?
Well, no, I also think it inspires terror, and they know it. That they want to be seen as really heinous, difficult people.
Yeah, I think the costuming and the background is real important. If you look at the Foley death, he was in a orange jumpsuit that was supposed to remind you of Guantanamo. The executioner stood above him. It was in a desert background. It's all staging.
I just think if I'm involved with a cause, whatever that cause is, and I'm standing up for something that I think is right, I want people to see who I am. These people are covering their faces.
Depends on the cause.
Working in the shadows.
In other words, if you are a quote unquote terrorist, and there are any number of intelligence organizations who have facial recognition software and all sorts of ways to identify you and maybe the organization and where you are and the background and everything else, you may want to cover up.
But maybe they don't consider themselves terrorists. Do the people in our Revolutionary War wear masks? Because they weren't on CNN.
Right. The British didn't have much facial recognition software back in 1777.
Anyway, I digress. And we want to talk about New York State politics, which is where it's really mean.
Ira, that was a great seg, as we say in the biz. Zephyr Teachout has survived another attempt by New York Governor Andrew Cuomo supporters to knock her off next month's Democratic primary ballot. A four-judge panel yesterday upheld a lower court ruling and rejected arguments from Cuomo supporters that Teachout didn't meet the five-year residency requirement. The challenge was brought by two men listed online as Cuomo campaign interns. They noted in court papers that Teachout listed a Vermont address on documents in 2012 and obtained a New York driver's license this spring. A Cuomo campaign spokesman says there are no plans to appeal Wednesday's decision. Teachout says she moved to New York City in 2009 to take a job as a law professor at Fordham University. She says Cuomo wanted to keep her off the ballot to silence opposition.
I have said many times that Cuomo is a brilliant strategist. I think he's very good on offense. I don't think he's that good on defense. And I think this was really a bad idea because what he's done is brought tremendous attention to Teachout as the beleaguered person. And he looks like a bully as a result of this.
Really,
and in a way, nobody would have known who she was. You know, you get
Zephyr
primary ballots.
Zephyr is no fool. Yeah. And she knew he was going to do this. She knew exactly how he was going to attack. She had the whole Fordham University staff lined up with advice and help for her on this. This was a stage for her. At one point, I loved it. She was crying on the stand. Zephyr's an amazing actor, among other talents that she possesses. And he did come off totally as a bully because he's asking about some landlord, and the landlord was a personal friend, and she had died of cancer, and Zephyr's crying on the stand. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. And so Al Jazeera interviewed her. New York Times did. She's all over the tabloids. She's all over social media, which she rules. And she is no fool.
I'm sure there were people, Rosemary, on his staff, on the Cuomo staff, who said, boss, because I think they're scared of him, but boss, don't do this. This is not a good idea.
She has played this so well. She has not lost her temper. She is an intelligent, original, imaginative woman. And she has come out looking good in this. I don't think she's going to win, but she has made a great campaign in bringing out some issues she really cares about. Corruption is one of them in his act on Moreland. And Alan, talk about this, because I think she may be deciding who the next lieutenant governor of this state is.
Well, that's right. You know, her lieutenant governor candidate is another law professor named Tim Wu. And the important thing to remember about Wu is that he comes from the metropolitan area, right? Now, The Democrats, that's where the Willie Sutton, you go where the money is. Mm-hmm. The Democrats are in the New York City region. That's why you seldom get anybody from upstate who can run for a political office as a Democrat. The reason is that it doesn't work because there aren't Democratic voters up there. Now Cuomo comes up with Kathy Hochul. The reason that he chooses her is that she's from that strategic Niagara area. Mm-hmm. She was a congresswoman. She lost. And she's unknown. And he's running on only in very few states like New York does this. You're allowed to run on several different lines. So you run on the Democratic line, you run on the Women's Party line, you run
the Working Families
line. If, in fact, she loses Hochul to Tim Wu, who is the teach out candidate, then, and I'm not exactly sure how all of this works, then they can't aggregate all the votes from all of the parties that he's running on, because he'll have a different lieutenant governor person in one party than in the others. Are you following me? It's clear as mud.
This sounds awfully familiar. Did this happen to his father? Didn't he have a shotgun marriage with Al Del Delo?
He did, but it was different in that there weren't all these other parties at stake. But he did get. But he did have to have Al Del Bello, and Papa Mario and Al Del Bello didn't get along, and Al Del Bello had to quit as the lieutenant
because
governor.
He wasn't getting along with
them. He wasn't getting much in the way
wasn't
of
doing anything.
Recognition.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, presiding over the state Senate is not exactly my idea of a terrific
fun job.
When I was here a couple of weeks ago when we talked about this, I said it just stunk, the fact that he was challenging this candidacy. I think you used the word bully. I think he just comes across as very small. But as you point out, he has a reputation of being a political strategist. So what was the strategy?
There are some people who think this is smart, that he should just ram her out of the way and not engage in what she wants. She would love a debate. And he will not do well in a debate on Moreland.
And will there be one?
Another thing.
Will there be a debate?
No.
But what was his strategy in challenging her?
What'd you say?
You mean a legal challenge?
There are many who thought he could win. She has reached Vermont.
I am Andrew. And what I want is what I want. And therefore, he
had a very strong lawyer. I think that there was a case that could be made. Her residency is muddled, as are many modern people, because her family's in Vermont and she lives in New York City. She's moved around. She also goes all over the world. She was living in Bosnia for a while, mm-hmm. which is how I know her. So her addresses are messed up. And I think they made an attempt. It would have just cleared
up
but a
they
little
were,
problem.
But Rosemary, they were going to find something. You know, first he had to find, she had to get 15,000 good signatures,
and
they're
going
to 45,000. Mm-hmm. So they're going to try to shove her off the ballot that way. If that didn't work, then they were going to go to this other thing,
which she's ready for. That's what I said. She knew about the signatures. She knew about the challenge on residency. He's going after her in the known ways.
But if, and I want to go back to something that was said before, if she gets 30% of the vote, the Democratic vote, because don't remember, a good deal of the Democrats are slightly left of center. And are furious at the Cuomo conservatism on teachers, on education, on other things, and on the banks. Then if she gets 30%, he's going to look bad.
So you're taking the position. I would offer that although we in the media or people who are in the Albany area and part of politics are engaged by this issue and know who Zephyr Teachout is. Nobody
knows who she is.
Right. And so, I'm hearing you argue, and tell me if I'm wrong, that whereas under certain circumstances, people who may not even know who Andrew Cuomo is in this state, the people who will be voting in the Democratic primary are informed enough to fully know who Zephyr Teachout is, and they will come out to vote.
That's correct.
It's a very low turnout, too,
right.
which she's counting on, too.
But the activists always come out. That's why the Tea Party wins on the Republican side, and that's why frequently liberal Democrats win on the Democratic side. And by the way, he'll have, going into the thing, we think $50 million bucks going into the general election. That's a lot of money.
All right, here's a crazy one.
Yeah.
Now, if my memory serves, and it's been a long time, but when Pataki beat Papa Cuomo, wasn't there a point not that far from election time when he was 35 points down?
So Pataki was.
Yeah.
Yes.
Doesn't that mean that all of this backlash, and I'm not saying teach out wins, but perhaps the negative spin from this, is there an outside puncher's yes. chance that Astorino wins the election?
No. Astorino's not going to win.
She's more than 30 points out. She's like 60 points out.
I thought
no,
you were
he's 28. Isn't he 28?
No. You're confusing apples and oranges.
Okay.
Ray's question is the general election.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Now we're talking about the primary election.
Okay.
I think the word is going out over the, over the interstitial, whatever you call it, when people communicate with each other.
I have no idea what that means.
Well, there were certain words I were going to use, but okay. I decided not to use it
Fair
because
enough.
I would offend somebody.
All right.
So in other words, the drums are beating, right? Mm-hmm. And people know, the Democrats know, and I'm hearing it all the time. I'm voting for Teach Out. People are calling me, and he has. When you interrupted me before, which is intolerable,
really?
there was 50.
What's good for the goose is good for the gander.
I was saying there was $50 million he's going to go into this election. He's going to use every bit of it. You can't turn the television on without seeing something about how wonderful Andrew is right now. And so, on the other hand, there is this sort of group who say, "I'm going to go out and I'm going to vote and I'm going to make my vote count," and that could really hurt him.
Are you done? I don't want to interrupt. I was going to give the email address.
Please.
Okay, good. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. And since we're not interrupting, Ira, please have the floor.
And before you do, I want to say if you're calling at if you're writing at WAMC.org, be sure to tell Ray to stop interrupting me.
Oh, God.
I think that he could get an uncomfortable result from this primary and that she will do better than he would like her to do. But he will win the primary, move on to the general, and then beat Astorino by 40 points. And anybody who thought that this was a big deal now, it will be largely forgotten in 6 months. The thing about the Pataki, and again, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, I remember that race pretty well, and it seemed to me that what hurt Cuomo as much as anything was Cuomo fatigue, that he had been
office Cuomo
for
fatigue,
so long.
Mario talks too much, they were saying. But more than that, it was a terrible year for Democrats.
Yeah. We've not yet reached Andrew fatigue in most places.
I would say I don't think Zephyr is going to win, but she's made many friends and gotten lots of attention, and we will see things from her in the future that I look forward to.
Yeah. And otherwise, you would think that Al Flanden might be the president.
Well, but that'd be great because we need another voice of Democratic politics.
Once again, the email address is roundtable@WAMC.org.
Landon?
We interrupt this broadcast for some underwriting.
Support comes from Southern Vermont Arts Center, presenting Brian Sweetland's Nature, A Vermont Artist's Journey, exhibition of broken color, aerial perspective, and plein air painting, svac.org. Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, for native ornamental grasses, long-blooming perennials, hardy mums, shade trees, pest repellents, garden supplies, and garden advice. wardsnursery.com. And Rhinebeck Kitchen and Bath, with locations in Rhinebeck and Coxsackie, offering design, project management, and installation throughout the Hudson Valley since 1997. rhinebeckkitchenandbath.com.
Rollicking. It turned out to be rollicking after all, didn't it, boys and girls? It's 9:52. It's the roundtable panel. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, Ira Fussfeld, and Ray Graff. And the email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Alan, we have more.
We have yet more. Okay, Ted says, Ira is so right. Terrorists who wear masks is, first and foremost, about hiding their identities. Terrorists group idiots want to inflict pain and suffering and not take individual responsibility because the foundation of their cause has zero weight. And then Peter on the same subject. And so, with full hijab, what's the takeaway? As humans, our faces speak many truths, and most cultures distrust, suspect the thinking of these who hide their faces. Indeed, perhaps it's just such an effect which serves to deepen the male-female divide in some Muslim countries. Something to consider. Yours from Bonnie. And then Joel says, unfortunately, I've been let down by Cuomo. Last week, I watched a debate between Teach Out and Randy Credico, and she looked weak, dodged questions, barely a true New Yorker, and too far to the left. Who am I left with? Randy Credico will get my vote. He's a comedian of sorts.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Signed, Randy Pretico.
Yeah. Okay, and then Thomas says, oh, my goodness, look at this.
It's a long letter?
Oh, my God.
Come on, yeah. Thomas, keep it brief, man.
MCLA, okay. Remember that the root causes of this mess baked back to 1920 when Britain and France divided up the former Ottoman Empire. That's what I'm going to read because it's way too long.
Okay.
I'm so sorry. History is good, but not
maybe
for
you can send
here
us
right
copies
now.
We'll get the lesson.
Yeah. You got to keep it short, as FDR said, and Ike also said. Ike said, if it can't be in a half a page, don't give it to
That's
me.
Why they called him Ike. Yeah. Eisenhower was too long.
But you are. Is that it?
Okay, no, it's
okay.
Not.
All right.
And then Gary says, Ray, how do you explain the cops in Ferguson with their faces covered? Gary from Woodstock. Do you want to respond to that?
No, I don't recall bringing them into it.
I don't remember it either.
I don't remember seeing cops' faces.
I think
faces
he's
covered.
Making the analogy. You see, you
yeah,
said...
he's saying they must be bad guys because they have those
well,
big shields on. But I think Ira,
Ray, Ira
should
would have
been
to bring
Ira.
Oh, well, all right. Well, if that's what he means, shields, I don't think they're wearing bandanas on their covering their faces. At least I'm
No, he's got a good point. They are shielding themselves. Mm-hmm. They didn't give us the name of the guy who shot someone who started all this
sure,
for a week.
That's figuratively, but not literally.
Okay, I liked your metaphor. Don't back away
okay,
from
no,
it,
I stand
come on.
All right, you two. Listen, there are only a few minutes left. Let's
we're
not fight now.
Here. Leave us alone while
transparency is good. They should face that community.
I look right through you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then you'll look right into my eyes and tell I'm a good person.
You
yes.
are.
Yes.
Okay, look, let's not let this Ebola? Get weird. Any more emails?
Why is that weird?
Well, I don't know. We have a few minutes
Ebola.
Left.
Ebola.
Okay.
Isn't it good news?
It is good news. And a spokeswoman for Samaritan's Purse says an American doctor who was infected with Ebola will be released from the Atlanta hospital today. Allison Geist told the Associated Press she doesn't have the exact time Dr. Kent Brantley will be released, but confirmed it will happen today.
Right. Well,
at last, a good news story.
Well,
it's
not
people
that.
Fighting and the world exploding. We may be beating a horrible virus.
That's right. And now we think, in some cases, we have antidotes to this thing.
Yeah.
Medical antidotes. So who gets it? If politics is the authoritative allocation of scarce resources, who's going to get that? How are we going to distribute it? Are the drug companies going to be interested in making it? Is it enough money? Will there enough money come out of it? And once again, do we treat Africans the way we treat other people in the world?
The media is going to be on this, number one, to make sure that happens. And number two, HIV came out of Africa. We let it spread all over the world, you know. And when we have a cure, we have to go back to Africa. So it's in our own best interest to help those who don't have the resources we do.
Just by defending myself, by way of, I wasn't saying we shouldn't
no,
help
I know
the
you
Africans.
Wouldn't.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I think there's a good chance that this is a good news story.
Yeah.
It's amazing that this has moved so quickly. Ordinarily,
right.
When there is a cure or a purported cure, there are many hurdles and steps that have to be gone through right. to get it to the patient. This being such a crisis and such a spreading crisis, it's amazing
they
how fast.
They took some shortcuts.
But did they do it at the expense of the Africans who they first tried it on?
Well, virology is what I'm thinking is this has been around for a little while. This
Since
is 76. Not a brand new disease.
Yep.
And we have made tremendous medical advances when it comes to dealing with other diseases. And therefore, this becomes a little easier for us to work on.
Yeah, I mean, they tried it on the Africans. Who else were they going to try it on, right? They're the only ones who caught it. I mean, you tried the worst cancer drugs that can kill you on the people who are the most sick. I'm sorry, I can't see a downside to the story.
I'm putting it out
story.
There for you to talk about.
Okay. Yeah. I'm pretty negative, but I think this is great.
And, it is good news.
It shows like, hey, we can solve Ebola climate change
because,
next.
Because as somebody said to me yesterday when I said, well, it's in Africa, it's not here. They said, we're still running planes back and forth between here and Africa. And all it takes
well,
is
that's,
a,
that
is
was
a
the argument,
people,
and that yeah. was the scare until people started reading into the fourth paragraph where it said you couldn't just catch it like by being breathed upon, much
yeah.
like you could a common cold. There was more interaction between people. But yes, and what I take from this, among other things, is that our friend Donald Trump, who was critical of these Americans being brought back into this country as if they were then going to spread the plague, we needed to bring them back into this country so that they could be treated in such a way as they could beat it, and then what we learned could then be exported to help others.
Well, yeah, but even so, I mean, it may not be breathing, but even so, you know, the very fact that your toupee may fall off and somebody might help you and put their hand on your head who has the Ebola virus.
Yeah.
Well, okay, and a last note, because I'm going to get it. Yeah. Hooray to all these doctors who have given their lives
Absolutely.
And taken huge risks. In this world, we need big heroes, and that is that.
You're right. That is it. We are out of time. Round table hour two on the way.